Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's the 22nd of June. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby.
And I'm Giles Archer.
And boy, is it hot, hot, hot. Heat wave well and truly underway in the UK. Well, how's everyone feeling? I mean, I know, Charles, you look like you're in a some sort of like a hot sauna session at the moment or hot yoga.
I've just had enough of it. I actually really enjoy the sunshine, but not when you've got to be inside. Yeah. You know, it's just brutal.
Sleeping's not easy, is it? Let's face it. I mean, there's even a guide in today's paper on bananas and separate beds, how to sleep in a heatwave, and literally loads of advice: open the window, sleep downstairs, turn the fan towards the window, have separate beds, don't sleep naked, stretch out in a starfish position. That sounds a bit dubious, that one. Eat cucumber, berries and bananas. So there's loads of advice. I mean, you can tell Kev's laughing. He's turning his air conditioning up about two. We don't have air con over here. Actually, I checked last night, Kev. It was 26 degrees at 10 p.m. It was the same temperature in the UK than it was in Cairo. So, and we don't
We've got humidity as well. All houses are designed to keep the heat in. You know, the BBC.
I'm not really feeling sorry for you guys. I'm sorry because I have the whole summer this way.
Kev, the BBC had an article out today. I'm not sure if you caught it, Bill. How to sleep through the hot weather, and had lots of practical tips. And then one of them was, suck it up and deal with it. It's hot for a few days at the beginning.
Or is it the old Peter Kay? Shut the F up and have a Solero.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, I don't wear very much in bed. You only have a cotton sheet. Yeah, I try and get some airflow of some description, whether
different
it's
different because your houses are out there are designed to keep the heat.
Yeah. No, it is. It's very
whereas in the UK, it's like you go up one level. We're in a three story. You go up one level here, mate. It's 27 degrees inside. It is insanity.
I've already decided I'm buying aircon for that. Yeah. Like it's only, it's really, if you only want to do like a couple of rooms, it's only a few thousand. Like it's not that expensive anymore.
Yeah. I think as that 1.5 degree thing, you know, that's the worrying target. It looks like we are going to get there in the next sort of 4 to 5 years. I reckon these summers are going to get a lot hotter and a lot longer in the UK, you know, genuinely. Be careful what. So I think, aircon is going to have a real run.
You can buy a 1.5 horsepower aircon here anyway for 400-500 quid. It's not like over the top.
Yeah, you can buy them here, little portable units that you put in the rooms, but you put the hose out the window, you know, the proper HVAC.
Yeah, but
system.
You want them on the wall for sure so you can switch them. To be honest, what we do here is my aircon is hot and cold. So when it's cold in the summer, in the winter, it's my heater as well. So it's not, you know, you got to be careful of that because it's not good for your chest, to be honest with you. But you put it on just to take the chill out of the room and then it's okay. Because I use it as much for the cold as I do for the hot.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to some of the news stories because we've got a very long podcast for you this week. Lots of news related to, obviously, Bitcoin Treasury, which we'll come on to later. But I think the real news story that's dominated the headlines this week, and Kevin and I touched on it last week, was the ongoing tensions between Israel and Iran, which have intensified with ongoing missile exchanges, marking a significant escalation in their long-standing conflict. Israel launched strikes on Iranian nuclear facilities, including the Arak heavy water reactor, claiming Iran was close to developing nuclear weapons, a claim which Iran denies. Iran then retaliated with missile and drone attacks, notably striking Soroka Hospital in southern Israel, killing civilians and prompting Israeli vows for further retaliation, including threats against Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. US President Donald Trump has also kept the world on edge, stating he will decide within 2 weeks whether the US will join Israel's military efforts, while also noting a substantial chance for negotiations with Iran. The US has deployed additional military assets to the region, including aircraft carriers, but has not yet committed to direct involvement. So I guess the first question is, would, you know, if the idea is to kill or dispose of Iran's supreme leader, who is by all accounts hiding in a bunker and with his family, would that be the end of Iran as we know it, or that the kind of like the communism and the fascist state of Iran, do we think?
Well, I think probably not. You'll just replace him with somebody else would be the first thing. The second point is you target the infrastructure, you target the bomb-making sites. You know, you could argue that some civilians have been targeted as well. But the key point is you don't want to kill the leader. You don't want to kill the person you negotiate with for a lasting peace. And, you know, does Israel want peace with Iran? I think Israel wants to weaken Iran. But I think we've now seen between both countries, the Iron Dome is not as impenetrable as potentially was fought a couple of weeks ago. And Iran is not as strong as potentially was fought as well. And it's clear now as well that Israel doesn't have the weaponry to penetrate that bunker. The US does. If the US hands it over, do they want to? Do they escalate it and make it much worse? Or do they improve the situation? And then on the other side of this, obviously, you have the, we can call it a war, but really it's mostly a massacre of Israel with Gaza. And you can argue tit for tat who started it. And, basically it's been going on for centuries. Yeah. But you have now this global political opinion swaying back and forth. You know, who is the good guy out in the Middle East? And the answer is nobody. The answer is you can argue that Israel is, I can't say that Israel or Iran or Hamas has any of my support. So, should the West just stay out of it completely is the next question. And I don't know. I think it's beyond our pay grade, but Kev may have an answer.
Yeah, it's a shit show, isn't it, really? Basically, excuse my French, but you've got one nation, probably quite a few others, who are determined to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. And then you've got Israel, who are quite determined to turn a part of the Middle East into Greater Israel. And those two things don't add up, And it is Israel, it's not the Jews. I keep repeating this. This is Zionism. It happened about 140 years ago that the world created Zionism. It's not a biblical thing. It is a political thing. Ultimately, this is the issue. Will those two things ever align? No, I don't think they will. So you're always going to probably have war one way or the other. You cannot completely destroy a group of people, whether that be the Palestinians, whether it be the Iranians, whether it be the Israelis, whether it be the Jordanians, whether it be the Egyptians, whether it be the Syrians. You cannot destroy their will to have what they effectively have a belief in. I think we can talk until we're blue in the face about whether Trump will do this, Trump will do that. It won't fundamentally affect will these places be at war in future, because they won't.
I think who do we think is the biggest loser in this whole thing? Because it's quite obvious someone is reeling from all this escalation.
Who do I think is the biggest loser?
Yeah.
I think everybody who's been maimed, killed, families affected, houses destroyed, etc. Yeah. These are all the biggest losers.
Absolutely. I didn't mean the innocents. I meant from a country perspective. I was actually alluding to Putin and Russia, because not only did they lose the Syria with Bashar al-Assad, a very good ally in the Middle East, but they're now effectively losing Iran, in the sense that if you think about it, Iran is supplying Russia with most of their drones, which they're using on the front line against the Ukraine, right? So if Iran is fighting its own war now and sending missiles and drones over to Israel, that they have effectively dried up the supply of missiles to Russia. If Khamenei is overthrown, then he's lost another ally in the Middle East. This could be pretty, big for Russia.
I guess we'll see. I mean, Russia has also said pretty much they're staying out of it,
Yeah.
And they're laying the gauntlet down to the US. Yeah. You can continue to provide weaponry to Israel, but nothing beyond what you already have, and then they'll have to sign a peace. So, but at the same time, in the markets, as you said, just before we went off online, they're forward looking markets at record highs. You'd think with Israel and Iran, India and Pakistan, Russia, Ukraine, all at each other's throats, that there would be, the markets wouldn't be, and yet they're forward looking. They're hoping for peace. That's what the market is.
That's exactly what they've said. They've predicted that, exactly that. And they've also, the whole TACO thing, the Trump always chickens out. They're relying on that for the whole tariffs as well.
But the key point
is, Trump's become a Mexican taco dealer.
Well, no, I mean, for me, the key point is that the market is pricing in Russia and Ukraine signing a peace, and Iran and Israel burying the hatchet. And China not invading Taiwan. And what happens if those things don't happen? Right. And it escalates. Yeah. And I'm not saying that it will, because I think if you try and become a Middle East, the more you learn about Middle Eastern politics in particular, the more you realize you know nothing.
Yeah.
But the point is, there is a chance of escalation. And as you drag more and more countries into it, in the world's center of oil production, with the Strait of Hormuz right there,
yeah,
the more you have a chance that there'll be a real inflationary shock and then we get a crash.
But yeah, we'll I've said it for the last few weeks on the podcast. The last thing I'll say is that, you know, that Marta Maid podcast, there's something to do with Jerusalem. I can't remember the exact name, but you'll see it. It's 26 hours long. Then, if you want to understand a little bit more about the Middle East and especially Zionism and the interaction of all of those countries, then listen to it. Okay, it's not particularly biased either way. It's not saying these are better than them or they're not better than them, but it gives you a historical view of what has happened in the last 130, 140 years. Yeah, maybe it's better to listen to that than watching Mobland, because Mobland is like going to do your head in.
Okay. So let's move on to our first guest this week. We're joined by a voice that you may well recognise, and it's been quite some time since we've had this guest on before, not actually a guest, but actually one of the original hosts of The Roast. We're delighted to be joined by none other than the infamous Albert Arthur. Albert, how are you doing, bro?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Moving house, had a baby, very busy at the minute.
Albert is officially out the hot tub, everybody.
Yeah, well, actually, funny you should say that, because I've just actually booked to get it. One of the conditions of buying the new house was they have to airlift in the jacuzzi. So I'm going to take a nice photo of that, I think, because the house is quite tall. So. Yeah.
Priorities, mate. Priorities. Yeah, we're also joined by Zinks, founder of Bitcoin Vote UK, with a background in medicine and finance. So welcome, Zinks.
Hi, thanks for having me on. Nice to meet you guys.
Not a problem. I mean, so Albert, I mean, I believe you've been developing some sort of AI bot, which I've seen you on your X post.
You might see it. So I've been coding this thing for about probably 6 years, and it started off with just trying to automate everything I was doing manually, like where's the RNS, what's the market cap, where's the price going, blah blah blah, all that stuff. And it's turned into a bit of a beast. It's running on about 6 nodes out of AWS now. And then what I started coding AI in Python. So I started by writing a system that what it does is it reads the news and scores the news. So financial results come out, you've got all the RNS, and to read all of those RNS, you might have 60 results in one day. What this does is, originally it didn't use the AI. It would look for words like exceeded expectations is always a go-to and stuff like that. And what it would do is count the good words and the bad words, ultimately give you a news score at the end of it. So I thought I'd dabble in AI. What is AI? I didn't really know what it was. I just thought it was like extended Google. But when you start coding it, it's very different. So what I then did is, where I'm looking for words like exceeded expectations, what you can do is you can put a vector embedding on that word. And what that would do, if you get words like cheeseburger and hamburger, they're different words, but they're closely associated. So what vector embeddings do in LLMs is allow you to find closely associated words. So what I started to do was, say if I have 100 words I look for in the news, each one of those 100 words gets vectored in the news. So rather than looking at 100 words, I'm now looking at 1,000 words. And every morning when the news comes out, the bot will read 60 articles in like 5 minutes, and then it scores them. So I get the score of the news based off these keywords, and then it will rewrite the RNS in a short term and give me that info. So, and then it will text me on Telegram. So in the morning, I just lay in bed and I go, "Oh, this is looking pretty good." And then if I want to go to the terminal, which is like my own little Bloomberg terminal I've been coding, that's the two elements of it. That's vector, that's LLMs. But then in the terminal, I've coded stock charts in the Python as well. And then with the stock charts, I've added the technicals like the MACD, you know, exponential moving averages, the things that you want to know, where's it going to. Alongside that, I've coded in like TR1 movement positions. So if something like pricks up and I go, oh, I'll go and look at that, it looks good in the news, then the score's good, the article looks good, I then just click on the page for the ticker and it's got a stock chart, and in that stock chart I've got the RSI and all of that, so I know if it's, and I can see the TR1s, so you can start building an algo there. And then on the stock price, I've got another kind of AI, which is neural networks, RNN. And what I do with that is, you know, you've got the chartist going backwards and forwards with resistance and stuff like this. trying to forecast where it's going to go on the fibs. What the RNN does is it puts AI to predict forward-looking movements on the price. So you've got three elements of AI that you can see the TO1 position. So I've been trading like that for the last 4 years. But rather than trade these AIM penny stocks, I've been trading mid-caps and just holding for like a month based off the algorithm. LSTM says it's going up. You can put LSTM on the MACD as well, which works quite well. So if the algo gets ticked, I just go, yeah, and I like liquidity. So like trading the mid caps for me is what I've been doing. And then obviously with what's just happened recently with Trump's come in, the infrastructure, he's come in early term. The infrastructure was there ready to go. So straight away, like you've got the foundations being built, and I could see what was sort of coming with this crypto cycle with Trump getting in. And then I started targeting like around into that sector at the minute. So I've moved some, like, you know, some of the liquid asset around and started trading some of these. And then, you know, with everything that's going on, all these crypto treasury companies are coming, and they're very, very interesting because I've never seen anything like it. You've got, this is how I met Zinx, actually, because me and Zinx were both in the same chat. Zinx is, he's come from more of the crypto background, and it feels like what's going on, it's kind of like crypto volume meets market volume, like joining forces, because these treasury companies, where you go into alt season and all this stuff's getting fired, all of this volume's coming in, it you know, usually doesn't get fired at the stock market. So what seems to be happening is the crypto altcoin volume is all coming through the stock market, which is giving us huge amounts of more volume. But what it also does is it allows the crypto guys exposure to the crypto through the stock market, where you can kind of buy this stuff through an ISA, a SIP. And now the funds, and it seems like, to me, it feels different, this cycle. It feels like Bitcoin is coming out of cycle phase into product phase because Trump's in so early term. It feels like, how would they even unwrap this stuff? Even at the end of his term, it feels like it really does feel like a different one this time around. So that's why I'm really interested in this, you know, this treasury type companies and stuff with Saylor's approach. What, like, at first I didn't get it. Zinx gets it a lot better than me, but
Let me ask Zinx. That's really good intro, and I really like that you sort of segued into that. But I want to just talk a bit to Zinx about, obviously, founder of Bitcoin Vault UK. What exactly is that, and a bit of your background? And I know, obviously, that, you know, as Albert just said, there's been some big plays on the markets with the likes of, I guess the first big one was the Smarter Web Company, which really saw an acceleration as it really used this flywheel model to kind of build its treasury or Bitcoins within the treasury itself. So just talk us through your kind of your background, Bitcoin Vault, and also your investment into the Smarter Web Company, please.
Okay, thank you. So firstly, I went to uni for quite an elite university to study economics and finance. And I was then in investment banking, which I then left and pivoted to go to medical school to become a doctor. So I was able to do that and pretty much choose whatever I wanted to do with my life because I was a early investor in Bitcoin. I've been in Bitcoin for over a decade now. And what we're seeing, Bitcoin Vote is essentially a lobby group and an advocacy group for Bitcoin. And what we are aiming to do is to put Bitcoin on the ballot sheet at the next election in 2029. In the UK, we are behind, you know, what's, you know, the progress and what's been happening in America and elsewhere all over the world. Things are really, really stagnant in the UK, which leads on to, you know, what's happening in the market with Smarter Web Company. On the 25th of April, there was an IPO. I managed to get involved in that. And since then, the company's 132x'd since April 25th. It's gone from 3.75 million market cap to just under a billion market cap in under 2 months. It's the most successful IPO, you know, that's happened ever in the UK. And, you know, it's only going to continue to grow. Prior to 2017, so, you know, the Bitcoin network came live in 2009. Up until, you know, between 2009 and 2017, it was predominantly you know, tech enthusiast. You know, it was a very, very niche area. But after 2017, we had, you know, the first wave of retail interest. Same with 2020 to 2021 bull market with, you know, lots of people getting involved, altcoin market going crazy. But what we have in 2025 now is, well, you know, with Smarter Web Company and Coincilium, is leverage Bitcoin equities. And essentially, these are companies that will buy Bitcoin and, you know, accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible, as we've seen in the US with Strategy. And then, you know, financial products and preferred shares to tackle the fixed income market and then use that to buy more Bitcoin. So essentially, it stemmed from what we call ourselves Bitcoin maxis, that we believe Bitcoin is going to 1 million and then 10 million. And essentially, the theory is that it's going to eat, you know, the entire fixed income market is going to completely take over, yeah, the financial world. So in the UK, we have a unique situation where we cannot buy Bitcoin ETFs in our ISAs or our SIPs. So Smart Web Company and Coincilium, they provide a unique opportunity for people who want Bitcoin exposure in these, you know, tax advantage accounts, which is why, you know, you're seeing the performance of these companies. Data just came up today that Smarter Web Company is the second most traded stock in on Hargreaves Lansdown, and Coincilium is ranked number 10. Both of these companies together have make up more than 97% of the daily trading volume now on Aquis Exchange. And I believe this will continue when they eventually get listed on LSE, FTSE 250, FTSE 100. And yeah, very, very exciting. Yeah,
it's absolutely crazy, isn't it? Because like what Zinx was just saying there is so not only have you got the access in your ISAs and SIP, but these companies keep buying all the Bitcoin. And we know what happens with demand and supply. If the right side of the RSP is dry, then it's going to go one way. So, and this volume that Zinx is talking about, Bitcoin isn't really gone into the mainstream yet. As soon as it goes to 120K, you know, your grandma's going to be calling you up to say, how do I buy some of this? I mean, I'm already getting
it. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy is what you're saying, isn't it? I mean, basically,
It's a system. It's a one system. Like all the other coins, they will never issue more Bitcoin. Sailor.
Yes, 21 million Bitcoins for everybody who's listening. But what I'd ask you both is, we're now also, what people think anyway, and maybe you're going to prove us wrong here, is that you've got Smarter Web Company gone off like a rocket, okay? And you've got Coincilium gone off like not a very strong rocket, but a rocket nonetheless. Then you've got now, which is going to become the London Bitcoin Company, which is already listed on the stock, on the UK stock market, as in on the main market. You've got Helium Ventures, who's now also basically, I think that's on Aquis as well, going to do exactly the same thing. And you've got Priority One, who's going to be the only one on AIM. So are all of these going to be winners? I suppose, I'll ask Zinc the question. Is there room for all of these based on what you're saying, which basically it could take over the whole system, which I have to argue with you, I doubt, but it could certainly, and it only needs a small proportion of the bond markets to do it.
It's the flywheel, fastest flywheel, MNAV. Zinx will be better to explain that. But the faster you accumulate in that MNAV and the NAV changes, the faster it goes up. It's kind of like they raise capital to buy the Bitcoin. When they buy the Bitcoin, you've got more NAV. When you've got more NAV, the cap goes up. When the cap goes up, the price goes up. Then they do a raise at a higher price, so you have a new floor. But Zinx is better to talk about the MNAV and all of that stuff.
Okay, the floor is yours, Zinc. Go for it.
Okay, so to answer the question whether they are all going to be winners or not, I mean, in comparison to other companies, probably, but in comparison to each other, there's definitely going to be clear winners. And the first mover advantage is very important. So each iteration and each company that comes after, I would expect their performance to not be as good as the companies that come before them, simply because there's only 21 million Bitcoin. So, you know, it becomes more and more difficult as price goes up to accumulate this Bitcoin. So the ones that have already got as much Bitcoin on their balance sheet stands to be you know, the winners. You also have things like execution, strategy, smart web. The market are very, very receptive to them because they have a CEO who is, you know, obviously a Bitcoin maxi, which is very important because the people who understand these stocks are those who understand Bitcoin. You have to have that conviction, and that gives you confidence, you know, that the company is not going to sell their Bitcoin when times are hard. They're also backed by UTXO, which the creators of Bitcoin Magazine, big, big American corporation who have also supported a Japanese company called Metaplanet, which has now become the most traded stock in Japan, the best performing stock in Japan. An important metric which is recently created is called Days to Cover MNAV, which is, you know, an emerging tool really, which is used to compare these companies. And what it does is it measures how long it would take a company at its current Bitcoin stacking pace to accumulate enough Bitcoin to justify its market cap based on its current multiple of net asset value and its daily BTC yield. It might take a while to get your head around these sort of new metrics, but essentially, the faster that you can accumulate Bitcoin, the more that the market is going to reward you.
But the interesting part about that, Zinks, just let me come back to you on that, because it is fairly confusing. But the scenario is that surely no matter how fast it goes up, you're not going to get one-to-one unless Bitcoin rises as well. So that has to be a factor, surely.
Right. So the days to cover for SWC, Smart Web Company, right now is around 35 days. So it does how high its MNAV is, if the calculation is that it's 35 days to cover it, shareholders expect to receive that value and for that MNAV to be covered in 35 days because of how aggressive they are stacking Bitcoin.
Okay, I'm with you now. So in other words, they're going to have to raise big money in the next few weeks to or even days to effectively cover the market value of the company.
Right. And that's what people are betting on. And also the people, of course, are betting on the rise of the Bitcoin price. They just announced, you know, currently by my calculations, they've got about, you know, just under 30 million on the balance sheet. They've started their ATM-like program where they can essentially, you know, sell up to 20% of the volume of the shares at the market, well, after close. And it's very highly accretive. So for SmartWeb, because the MNAV is so high, they can sell shares at a premium, and essentially they're buying Bitcoin for far cheaper than what the current price is at.
I understand that. So basically what you're saying is now the paper, if you like, the equity is worth much more than the Bitcoin effectively. And therefore, by transferring one and putting it into the Bitcoin, you're going to bring this MNAV closer and closer and closer to one, especially if the Bitcoin value goes up. Is that fair to say?
It depends. Over time, we expect the MNAV to compress simply because the rate of accumulating Bitcoin will slow down. It's a scarce asset, and you know, the price is going to continue to go up. But for now, because of, you know, the market that SWC is tackling, there's still a lot of capital out there to bring in to Bitcoin. And you've got to remember, this is just the start of the journey in the UK. If you look at America with strategy, you know, they've developed products like Strike, Strife, and Stride to tackle the fixed income market. So essentially, the long-term plan for Bitcoin treasuries like SmartWeb, which is the first mover in the UK, is to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible, then issue preferred shares and over-collateralize this preferred shares with Bitcoin, which is what we believe to be the most pristine asset in the world or ever created.
Which in simple terms is leverage, yes?
So also, one thing that I like about it that I think some people miss is, right, look at the market cap of SWC, right? They hold about £27 million worth of Bitcoin. They're sitting on a unicorn, right?
Yeah.
If Bitcoin did a 20% downward swing, that's only a 5 million on a unicorn cap, but they still hold the asset and everyone's still buying it. The asset is still there. This is the beauty. Because people say, oh, what happens if the Bitcoin price crashes? Well, the 20% swing is 5 million on a unicorn cap. Doesn't matter. The system's still there. This is the beauty of the system.
But, yeah, I agree with you and disagree with you, because the reality of this whole situation is that buy, raise, and also use whatever other systems are in place to, I mean, we were talking to one of the, or I was listening to one of the guys yesterday, and we were talking about taking, putting call options out on BTC, on the BTC that they have, so that, you know, premiums can be made in that way. I mean, what I'm saying to you is, no matter what happens in these companies, there has to be an underlying way for them to also make income as well as holding these BTC.
They do that via
after the first stage is what I mean. So accumulation, first stage. Second stage has to be create some sort of business that has revenues so that you can continue the BTC pro situation. And then if you have the thesis like you guys have, which Bitcoin is basically going to be an incredible store of wealth in the future, then ultimately that store of wealth can then be used as a financial instrument. Am I right in your thesis, or am I just talking crap?
How aware of you, knowledgeable of you, of Strategy in the US?
I'm not aware of it, to be honest, but what is the market cap of Strategy?
Right now, it's 100 maybe, billion? Yeah, just over $100 billion.
$100 billion, not million, $100 billion.
$100 billion.
So it's 100 times the size of SWC. So do you see SWC in that stratosphere or yes. Not quite?
Yes. So the Strategy are 5 years ahead of everyone else. But SWC had an operating business, and they still do. It was a web design business. They run very lean operations, same as Coincilium. They run very lean operations, and it's not that complicated to just buy and hold Bitcoin. So it's not, you know, they don't have super high expenses. And, you know, within the next 5 years, what you're going to see is, you know, the most successful British IPO of all time start to eat the FTSE 100. It's going to go to 10 billion, then 20 billion, 50 billion, 100 billion. And it's going to be the best performing stock. You know, by 2030, it's going to be the best performing stock of the last 5 years. These next 5 years belong to Bitcoin and Bitcoin treasury companies. But obviously, you have to have a belief in the underlying asset to, you know, have these sort of assertions.
On the flip side, I really like the enthusiasm, you know, the optimism. But what would happen if some sort of regulation, at the moment, there's not a lot of regulation, certainly on Aquis, but what would happen if some, you know, Reeves came along and said, now this is getting ridiculous, this is just a Ponzi scheme, you know what I mean? Like, on the flip side, what are the risks?
Right. So the regulatory risks have definitely been something to consider, but I think the travel of direction is going the other way now. You know, we follow America, and they've, you know, the journey since, even compared to, you know, 10 years ago, has been amazing. Even just recently, the FCA have said that they are going to now reconsider the ban of crypto and Bitcoin ETNs for retail investors. So, you know, the direction of travel is only going one way. We've seen Nigel Farage in the UK speak at the Bitcoin conference in Vegas. He mentioned about setting up a, you know, Bitcoin strategic reserve in the UK. He's mentioned about cutting capital gains tax on Bitcoin from 20% to 10%. You know, the Americans are moving at rocket pace to incorporate Bitcoin into their financial system. And, you know, it's going to get to a point where it becomes politically infeasible to be against Bitcoin, because, you know, we will vote them out, we will organize, and we will, you know, the Bitcoin lobby is strong now. And as the price goes...
So you guys are going to be reformed behind the Reform Party, then, I take it?
No. So Bitcoin Vote UK is neutral. We're pro any politician that supports Bitcoin. So if it happens to be, you know, those that come from that party, then so be it. It's unfortunate, but right now, the Labour Party, you know, with, you know, BTC Policy UK, Bitcoin Policy UK, they've tried to engage with them, but they're very slow to innovation. And who knows, but the direction of travel, I think we've gone far past the regulatory risks for Bitcoin.
The key risk is going to be then the Bitcoin price, right? Because I'm not talking for Strategy, which obviously has, I mean, had 500 million in revenue last year, so it can keep itself going. But Bitcoin was, you know, $50,000-ish back in September,
mm-hmm.
$26,000 back in kind of summer of 2023. And now it's over 100,000. You know, the long-term trajectory is obviously rising, but the volatility along the rise has been massive. So, yeah, I mean, I guess my issue is if the flywheel goes into reverse for some of the, not all of them, but some of these companies, that's where the danger is if they can't raise the money at the premium valuation, if the net asset value starts to fall and they don't, and they're not able to hold on to their Bitcoin and they have to sell them to keep the lights on. That's the danger for some of them. Would that be right?
It depends on the company, but the best ones and the strong ones, and if they follow the strategy playbook, which is, you know, the gold standard,
don't sell
in the industry. Yeah. There's plenty of, you know, creative financial engineering you can do. If you believe, you know, the MNAV has gone too low and it's below one, you can also just buy back stock. You know, yes, the Bitcoin price is very volatile, but since its inception, the volatility is decreasing over time as it matures into, you know, a world recognized asset. And, you know, we know long term what the trend is. They're not going to stop money printing. They're not. It's impossible. Fiat is going to zero. You know, it's an asymmetrical bet. And we've been winning since 2009. And we're not going to stop winning until Bitcoin reaches 1 million, then 10 million. And these stocks, like, and Smarter Web Company, who've got in this early, and I put in Bitcoin on their balance sheet, they are going to be at the top of their local indexes in the future to come. Just like how Strategy hasn't, you know, gone from a $1 billion company to a $100 billion company, you know, in the space of 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. It is tricky, but I guess the other thing is the regulation goes the other way, right? As in, if you know, the issues like the EU, the UK PRIIPs regulations, the US domiciled ETFs that we can't really market in the UK, you know, the US ETF providers, they don't publish KIDs for the US funds. So basically, at the moment, the only real way to access Bitcoin in a tax advantage account in the UK is through Smarter Web or Consilium or, you know, another Bitcoin treasury prey, which is why they're so popular. I guess if you can then buy Bitcoin or buy one of the US ETFs in the UK in the future, maybe that's a risk for UK domiciled ones as well.
You can buy Strategy in an ISA or a SIP. In 2020, I bought Strategy. You can buy also Metaplanet, which is, you know, the Japanese version of Smart Web. You can buy, so you can do these sort of things. But it's important to note that IBIT, which is the BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF in America, that hasn't taken away from people wanting to buy these leveraged Bitcoin equities, because essentially what you're getting is you're getting a performance of Bitcoin, but leveraged. In the UK and Japan, both of these places, it's very unique right now, that in the sense that you can't get hold of a Bitcoin ETF. So these companies have that pent up demand. And that's why you're seeing these, you know, this performance. And it's going to continue.
I've got a good analogy, I think. I think what we've just arrived in the UK is now a little bit of underage drinking for 16-year-olds. Because now we can actually get at the Bitcoin in a tax-efficient manner, whereas before we couldn't. So everybody wants to get drunk on it. And I think over the next few years, it will then become an adult. And as you said, then Bitcoin will be perceived then. And really, it has no choice now, even though I was never a believer, because it's based on make-believe, just the same way as fiat currencies are, by the way. So that's not a criticism. That it has a store of value, you know, and this is a way of, you know, multiplying this very, very rapidly, so that these companies, and I think they're all going to be winners. As you said, I think we can probably give you a list of 6 or 10 that are in the UK that are buying Bitcoin and have bought Bitcoin, have Bitcoin, or about to buy Bitcoin in the next few weeks. SWC has a few months advantage. Well, I think there are going to be other winners, because it's a big space now and there's going to be lots of room, I think, in the UK.
Coincilium should do well, I think. They've been up the MNAV forecasting on that. There's one of the guys from SWC who's put a website together tracking Coincilium and SWC. So I think Coincilium is just getting to a good point now, isn't it, Zinx?
Yeah, I don't think people actually sort of believe it at the minute, and this is why this educational stuff is very important, how it works, because I think people are just like, oh, okay, I'll go with that, this is the right thing to invest in, but that there actually is a methodology and a way that this is going to work. And, you know, I mean, you could argue, and based on what you said, is that the company that was Veneza or whatever it was is now going to be BTC, is a step ahead because they're already regulated on the main market in the UK. So if your argument is that SWC and Consilia are going to move to the main market because that would facilitate better liquidity, then the argument is that one should catch up very, very quickly if that was the case.
Liquidity on the AQUIS this time is very different. You get digital live quote. I mean, I could sell a million shares in coin yesterday. They're 400k's worth in one trade. That's ridiculous. There used to be phone call only jobs.
I think the reason why
SWC has done so well is because it's been on AQUIS, because there's less market makers, there's less shorting.
You can't short, it's almost impossible, short, yeah.
Exactly, so it's done really well.
In regards to the AQUIS exchange, the reason why actually it's beneficial for these companies to be on AQUIS is because they are able to dilute their stock essentially without having any limitations. The problem with the LSE at the moment, they're changing it now, but you can only do up to 20% dilution of your stock right now, and they plan to change that to 75%. So at this stage, it's actually far better for these companies to be on AQUIS exchange.
Yeah, I agree, but they've also changed their policy because they just had that AGM. They've got 50% more headroom, and also they've got the ability now to lend the stock that is in the hands of the board or whatever, which is another 50%. So they can raise faster. But your point, individuals being involved and the right individuals, you know, right? I'm not saying you're wrong, but the point I was trying to make was that they're already on the LSE, and that's the sort of method that you're looking to try and achieve with SWC as well, that it needs to be on a bigger exchange.
After the AQUIS exchange has been a beautiful place for these companies to incubate.
Yeah, agreed.
And when they get to, you know, 10 billion market cap and it can go straight into the FTSE 100, that's exactly what they're going to do. You know, the volume, you know, has come to AQUIS because of these companies, and, you know, it gives them the tools to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. So I'd argue at this stage, being on the AQUIS exchange is actually beneficial.
I think I'm in agreement. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I think during the acquisition stage, being on AQUIS is an advantage. I think you've got one company that's on the main market, and we're going to see how that plays out. We've got one company that's on AIM, which is priority one, which is what one told you about, which also has, you know, an inherent AI business and also a big data business. So they are not clear full-on treasury exchange businesses, okay? But they will still do very well, in my view, anyway. But what you're talking about is clearly on that. Now, the other one was HEV, which was, what did that stand for? Helium something or other.
Helium Ventures.
Helium Ventures. Now, this one is behind SWC and Coin, but just raised the money last night, 5.2 million, all going to buy Bitcoin. So within like a week, they're going to now have 5 million. How many Bitcoin is that going to buy you at the current price? Quite a lot, 50 or 60. Maybe 70 even. So they're all catching up. How quickly do you think SWC is going to go to, you know, literally several thousand, if not tens of thousands of Bitcoins?
So me personally, right now, I would only stick with SWC and Coin for multiple reasons. You know, I think SWC is obviously the first mover and the safest out of all of the companies that we've mentioned. They're far further along the risk curve. They're far along the risk curve where there's enough alpha in there to, you know, make outsized returns. If you want a smaller market cap company, Coincilium, you know, is again, slightly further along the risk curve, but your returns are going to be, you know, even greater in regards to how much Bitcoin they plan to accumulate. So SWC plan to accumulate 1,000 Bitcoin within 3 months. They're well on task to accumulate that. And I wouldn't be surprised if by month 4, 5, they have 2,000 Bitcoin. There's a lot of creative financial engineering going on right now, but essentially, you know, they're sucking in that excess demand and that liquidity and converting it very efficiently into buying Bitcoin. Coincilium is on the same sort of trajectory. But yeah, what really underpins these companies is, you know, they have Bitcoin native CEOs, which are people who have been in the space for a long time, understand and have that belief in Bitcoin. Because there's no point buying a leveraged Bitcoin equity if the CEO is not a Bitcoin maxi. If he's not 100% certain, well, 99%, we can't be certain about everything, anything. But if he's not 99% sure that Bitcoin is going to a million, then why would anyone want to buy their leveraged Bitcoin equity when they can choose a company that has someone that's been in the space for years and you know they're not going to sell when or if times get difficult? But yeah.
Yeah, we have our thoughts on it, but I think the market has its thoughts as well, so let that be. But yeah, I mean, I think there's my view was, and this was a week ago now, but I believe there's going to be 5 or 6 winners. I mean, I don't know how many companies are in the £1 billion and £1 million range in the US, other than the one that you mentioned that's 100 million, 100 billion.
Right. So there's quite a few. The thing with the US, though, is that they moved a lot quicker than we did.
Yeah.
And they also have far deeper capital markets. But there you've got Semler, you've got Mara Holdings, you've got the new 21 play, you've got, you know, asset management, Vivek Ramaswamy's company coming in. There's quite a few players. There's a list, actually. If you follow someone on X called Hodl 15 Capital, or on the website, there's a bitcointreasuries.net website, and you can see all the different corporate entities that own Bitcoin. Even Tesla have 11,000 Bitcoin, and they bought that back in 2020 or 2021. So, you know, it's a different ball game. But I would say that, based on my projections, that if a company can accumulate 1,000 Bitcoin, for example, these will all be players. £1 billion companies.
Yeah.
I just want to move on to one question for Zinks, really, because I saw a really interesting post on X a few weeks ago you made, where you proposed a kind of solution to UK debt. And you effectively said that, you know, I propose the UK government issue 500 billion in British Bitcoin bonds at an interest rate of 2%, £100 billion or 20% is used to buy the Bitcoin, with the UK splitting the profits with the bond buyers tax free. And then effectively you said that, you know, that looked at the current price of Bitcoin, about £77,000. And by 2045, Bitcoin is projected to reach 10 million, say. And then obviously that's the projections. And then that would turn the 100 billion investment into roughly 12.8 trillion. The UK government is left with 50% of the gains, which is a staggering 6.4 trillion, more than enough to pay off the debt twice over and enhance the private wealth of the UK population. Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible post, but yeah, what have you had that vision for a while?
Very unlikely, but
yes, I think you're right.
So, what this is a play on the idea of Bitcoin bonds. The original idea again came from America, but what I've done is I adapted it for a UK setting, and it's, you know, called it the British Bitcoin bond. And essentially, you know, the UK is on a very scary and, you know, irrevocable path of money printing. You know, the debt is going higher and higher and higher. You know, the demographics is terrible. You know, there's no way to get out of this. You can't keep taxing, you keep raising taxes. You know, yeah, it's the highest since World War II. What are we going to do? Essentially, the interest on the debt is rising.
Yeah, so, I think we're going to have to give the Samaritans number out shortly, so you can stop there.
Oh,
carry on with your solution.
Yeah, so it honestly is quite bleak, but, you know. So the solution is for the government to essentially issue these British Bitcoin bonds. And essentially, you know, the government issues gilt every year. They try to sell, you know, hundreds of billions of pounds worth of debt every year. And they return, you know, I think 10 years, I can't, at the time of writing this anyways, the 10-year rate was 4.67%, 20-year was 5.3%. So yeah, the UK sells roughly 265 billion pounds worth of debt every single year. And my proposition was for the government to issue a 500 billion pound British Bitcoin bond at an interest rate of only 2%. So already this lowers the interest that they have to pay on the new debt that they were, they, you know, the debt that they currently issue. 2% versus the current 5.3% or the 4.67%. And you ask, okay, what would they do with this money? Why would people take that on? Well, the incentive would be is that the government would take this money and invest it into Bitcoin. And what it would do is the people who have bought these bonds, they would get back 2%, but they also get 50% of the profits with the British government on the returns of Bitcoin. And, you know, the reason why this would pay off the debt is because the projection of the Bitcoin price, you know, by 2045, we do expect Bitcoin to hit 10 million pounds per coin. And right now it's at, what, 78K? So we expect it to go to, you know, Michael Saylor has a model that the Bitcoin price is going to go to $13 million per coin by 2045. Right now, it's just under 110,000. So, you know, we would also make the gains on this tax-free. And, you know, in this way, we would be able to pay off the debt. The UK government would be significantly richer. The buyers of this debt, you know, the British population would also be far wealthier. And obviously, you have to have this belief in Bitcoin. But at this point, you know, what are the other solutions? It's a gambit, in quotation marks, if you don't believe in it. But other countries, if they move first, the problem with the 21 million limit, the supply cap is that, you know, it rewards those who move first. You know, it's all about game theory. And if the UK government was to show some innovation and do something like this, they're able to pay off their national debt.
Yeah, I guess the, you know, the alternative, and we probably don't have time to go into this, is moving back to a gold standard and how painful that might be. I think there's pain no matter which way we go. But, you know, tangentially connected, Trump Media and Technology Group, obviously owned by the President of the United States, he filed with the SEC a few days ago to launch an ETF to hold both Bitcoin and Ethereum. And as I'm guessing, I wonder, do you think that's the first step towards a US strategic Bitcoin reserve? Or do you think it's just you know, just effectively another treasury in all but name?
He knows what's coming. So he's making profit off this. He knows, you know, essentially that there was a bill in the US called by Cynthia Lummis to buy the 1 million Bitcoin and to put it in the strategic Bitcoin reserve. So all this is what it sounds like is obviously Trump is going to profit from what he knows is about to come. He's probably knows as well that he's about to print a load of money in a big, beautiful bill. And these sort of assets are going to skyrocket. So, you know, this is a way for him to profit from what he knows is about to happen.
But here's a question for you, right? Is Bitcoin going up in value? Like, for example, is gold going up in value? Or is it simply the fiat currency that keeps getting printed is becoming less valuable? Because is it growing in value, or is it just commanding more dollars because there's just more dollars out there? I guess
it's both. You know, of course, the devaluation of the currency is causing all asset prices to go up. I know, is UK housing going up, or is, you know, the pound going down?
Going down. That's what it feels right. Like. Yeah.
So, you know, the thing with Bitcoin and the reason why there's so much alpha in it is because it's the monetization of essentially, you know, the best asset that we've ever created. You mentioned gold returning to a gold standard. Absolutely. A lot of people who believe in Bitcoin also believe in, you know, the gold standard. But the problem is that.
Yeah, sorry, just to interrupt. I think there's a good argument. Most people who hold Bitcoin will also hold some gold and vice versa. I don't think it has to be, you know, a binary thing. You can
definitely
have both.
Yeah. Definitely. But the proposition of Bitcoin is that it's far superior to gold.
Yeah.
It's, in a sense, it's a digital gold. I can send you Bitcoin right now. If I had a lot of gold, you know, A, I'm going to get robbed. But B, you know, I can't transact it to anyone all over the world within seconds.
I mean, I need a wallet, but if I set one up, will you send me something?
Yeah, sure. I'll send you some.
I don't know. The flip side of it, though, like, and I know this sounds sort of very end of the worldy, but Spain, Portugal, parts of France went completely dark for a couple of days, only a month or two ago. And there was no way to send Bitcoin out at that point, you know, whereas gold, you know, regardless of, you know, whatever happens with the digital world in the future, stays. So, yeah, I think there's advantages and disadvantages to both. But I you know, the advantages obviously for Bitcoin in terms of you talk about like the actual how you, you know, how do you define money and like the six traits of money, it's got huge advantages over gold. But I think, you know, this is quite an interesting like, philosophical question, I guess, if you like. Imagine if one person, say it was you, Zinx, and you had all the Bitcoin in the world, and then let's say Kev had all of the gold in the world. Kev would probably be able to sell his gold. Would you be able to sell your Bitcoin to other people? Would they be interested in the idea? I don't know. I mean, that's basically, but it's obviously that's unlikely to have happened, but as a thought experiment, I think it's quite a good one.
Well, firstly, in a world where we don't have the internet and it's all dystopian, I wouldn't be buying your gold. I will have a weapon on me and I will take it. So that's you know.
Come and get you think you're hard enough, Sim.
No, but that's the scenario that
I know.
It would be in. You know, I wouldn't, you know, it would be every
it's
man.
Like that the movie, that Finn movie where he's hoarding the gold and he has to carry it across, I think it's Finland, and everyone's after his gold. He actually gets his gold mugged and he has to get it back. It's incredible. And it's almost like that. It's just completely lawless.
Yeah. So in the collapse, you know, Mad Max situation, then, you know, everything is, I think we'll have different priorities then. Sorry, in regards to, if I had all the Bitcoin and someone had all the gold. Well, firstly, obviously that's never going to happen. But secondly, how Bitcoin works is that it needs to be mined and it's going to, you know, be mined up until, you know, 2140 anyways. So new Bitcoin is created with every block reward roughly every 10 minutes. So, and every 4 years, you know, it halves, the block reward halves, which creates that supply shock.
I've got another curveball for you, okay? And I love going down these rabbit holes, so apologies everybody who's listening, but what happens when quantum computing gets to the point where it can basically crack these keys?
It doesn't matter unless you're trying to crack some key. Quantum computing is irrelevant.
Right. No, but what happens if it can crack those keys?
Right, so firstly, the Bitcoin community is very, very astute, very clever and very intelligent. And before that even happens, you know, you can always upgrade the protocol for it to be quantum resistant. But number two, the companies that are creating and advancing quantum computing are never, ever going to release it to the public because it will just end up destroying their own models. If quantum computing was at the point where it could destroy the most powerful, decentralized and secure network in the world, which is Bitcoin, if you look at the hash rate, you know, then the whole moat of Google, Microsoft would be completely destroyed because these are digital companies that sell digital products. So, you know, again, it's pretty much a Mad Max scenario. At that point, you know, banking and everything will be, you know, completely destroyed. So that's not something...
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's why I want to buy a piece of land, have some chickens and some, you know, some cow and, you know, plant some potatoes and all of those things, because the thought of either Bitcoin or gold or fiat currencies all going to rubbish, if you like, means we are back in the dark ages.
Yeah, as I say, what's got me interested from the stock market perspective is being able to buy these things via the SIP and the ISA. I like I think when the mainstream click onto this, like flywheel setup, there's going to be even more rapid volume coming in. I think Zinx was saying, SWC, the volume on Aquis, I think it's the top volume coming through SWC. And I think where was Coincilium and SWC? You can digitally trade those now as well. On the Aquis, you can get a live quote. It never used to be like that. A lot of these, like, heavy phone call jobs. You don't want 100 people trying to make a phone call at the same time. Get me out fast type thing. Do you know what I mean? If there's a problem. So I like that. I like the supply of Bitcoin You know, they're never going to issue any more. And all of these treasury companies, as more pop up, they're all buying Bitcoin. I think Saylor was saying it's not possible to buy more than £50 million worth of Bitcoin in a single day. So they're all contending with each other to buy all of the Bitcoin, which ultimately I think is going to push it up. So I think it's exciting times in the stock market. It reminds me of the COVID testing kit days, but without the virus. Because in the COVID testing kit days, you got all the volume from, you know, all the grannies and all the people that never really touched the stock market. No one was at work. So it's just, I just think there's some crazy, I think it's early days in this stuff. And I think there's some serious volume heading to the market. I think you'll see, I mean, wars are kicking off and all sorts going on, isn't it? So, I mean, even trading the mid caps in this market would be problematic. I'd probably have cash on the bench again. But this one has lit my eyes up. So good times ahead, I believe, for everybody involved. And thanks, Sinx, for coming on. That was some really interesting information you gave us there.
Cheers. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
So let's move on to our second guest this week. We're joined by James Sheehan, CEO of Priority Intelligence. Welcome back to the podcast, James.
Thank you for having me, guys. Really nice to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, no worries. I mean, obviously, we saw the recent news that the company has adopted a Bitcoin treasury management policy, allowing it to accept Bitcoin and stablecoin payments through Coinbase Commerce with non-BTC crypto to be converted into Bitcoin or cash within 3 days. The company may invest up to 50% of its surplus cash in Bitcoin and will appoint an independent treasury agent if holdings exceed £1 million. James, you cited rising client demand for crypto payments and see Bitcoin as a strategic asset supporting growth. While unregulated and high risk, the company believes Bitcoin offers long-term value and relevance for modern business transactions. So tell us more about this new adoption of Bitcoin treasury, please, James.
Well, I think you've seen across the London capital markets as a minutia of what's going on across wider corporate landscape that many companies themselves are now starting to adopt the Bitcoin treasury mandate and starting to build into that space. And it's become apparent to us with the kind of companies that we're working with, and they are sometimes technology first businesses, that they have, you know, digital assets and the means to pay and the desire to pay for services utilizing them now. So it made sense for us as we've built some really strong relationships now over the last 2 years in the AI space and in the technology space in general, to start accepting payments, first of all, in digital assets and then converting them into BTC, which we see is obviously a really good long-term store of value, as many do. And the Bitcoin treasury announcement today, gents, is all about the regulatory framework around which we can manage and now potentially as well invest in BTC, given the fact we are obviously very much a public AIM listed company. It's important that we make sure, and we made sure before we took these steps, that we took the right regulatory advice, the right legal advice, which we've had now, and we adopted a policy and a strategy that was fit for a public capital markets business with strong corporate governance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So obviously, in the earlier update in May, you kind of introduced these Bitcoin payments for customers. And then obviously the recent update today took it a step further, where you've sort of formally integrated Bitcoin into the company's, I guess it's the financial infrastructure, through this structured treasury policy, which will turn crypto from a payment option into this effectively a reserve asset. So do you have any plans in the near term to buy any Bitcoin? And, you know, what might that look like?
As you can see in that document, we can hold up to 50% of our surplus cash in treasury asset, Bitcoin treasury asset. I think it's clear that, you know, the world, that the global environment is looking at Bitcoin. Obviously, it's a volatile asset, but is looking at Bitcoin now as a very interesting asset class. You've got the US government, the US Treasury buying into the asset class. So I think it would be important for us to certainly, you know, hold some Bitcoin to be honest, it's something we'll look into. We'll look into utilizing some of the capital, because we have recently done a financing, and we obviously do have cash on the balance sheet to potentially invest some of that into Bitcoin in line with that treasury management policy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, obviously, that you just alluded to that 50% surplus cash cap. How was that figure determined?
That was determined by looking at a number of factors from a legal point of view. that the most important one being that Bitcoin treasury is not the main focus of our business. It's very much a secondary opportunity for us to potentially store some value. And the main focus of our business is our artificial intelligence and soon to be, hopefully post the shareholder agreement, data services business. And our AI and data services solutions business is now growing. The teams are starting to work together and collaborate in a very positive way. We're seeing some really exciting developments from both customer focused and also new opportunity focused synergies and crossover opportunities for sales. So that is and will maintain and always be the main focus of our business, growing that and developing out our AI and our data services businesses. But obviously the Bitcoin treasury opportunity is something that we are going to develop. And we needed to make sure that it never became the biggest focal point of our capital and capital deployment strategy. Therefore, obviously up to 50% means that, you know, we're not going over half of the business assets in that area at any one time. And that's really where we came to that number. And it's important to make sure that, you know, it's surplus capital over and above that, which we're utilizing for obviously really growing out the AI and data solutions businesses now with Hearthspace.
So James, it was really big news, but market didn't really respond that much to the Hearthspace deal. So my first question is, does Hearthspace, once it's incorporated, and you've obviously got some synergies there to save, does Hearthspace make priority one cash flow positive going forward?
I think on last year's numbers and with the potential margin enhancing or savings, the synergies that we've got between the two businesses, I think if you include our revenue and our revenue trajectory, then we should be cash flow break even, I'd say, as a combined entity this year. So, I mean, running on those numbers, it's quite an exciting addition to have Hearthspace on board. They did, and it's in the RNS, they did £925,000 of revenue last year, made a small profit. And as we've mentioned, there's both cost savings and there's also revenue enhancements in terms of margin, utilizing our technology versus some of their outsourced technology that will help drive that EBIT margin significantly and cover some of the G&A that we have now as a public company.
Yeah, I've been banging on this week about people being a little more careful and just having these BTC plays that also have an inherent business, you know, so the business itself can generate revenue, can generate profit, so that it can propose and go into the BTC, and you're not just going on this raise. That doesn't detract from the fact that, you know, to get this process started, you probably do need to raise money, have money for acquisitions again, and invest in BTC. Would that be fair?
I think what you're alluding to is this kind of flywheel nature of some of these recent market transactions that have been going on since, you know, the emergence of SWC, Smart Web Company, over the last 2 months. It's been a really, I mean, as a market individual myself and somebody that's been in the capital markets for a long time, I have to say it's been a really, really tough 3 years, probably the worst market I've known in the small caps in 20 years. So it's been exciting and really positive to see companies in this Bitcoin treasury space do so well, obviously catalyzed by that SWC listing on Aquis and the flywheel impact that they've had raising capital and deploying it into Bitcoin. And there's been another number of others. And I will not detract from those strategies, because they're clearly working. There's quite clearly an obvious demand from capital markets and also institutional investors to participate in these deals. And I think, provided the companies can manage that MNAV that they're all talking about, and, you know, in the early stages, a number of them seem to be, provided they actually deploy cash into the Bitcoin space, because there's a number of companies obviously talking about it that haven't yet been able to do it, then I think that is a really genuinely exciting, and I hope it lasts a much longer process. You've seen things like Michael Saylor's MicroStrategy in the US and Metaplanet in Asia, you know, drive significant $1 billion valuations utilizing similar long-term strategies. And I'm excited to see that actually enter the London capital market. So
yeah, so I think we're all excited for the liquidity. It's fantastic. You know, in the end of the day, this liquidity is going to drop down maybe the wrong word, but seep into all of the other sectors, not just technology, but I think into the resource sector, which we cover a lot of as well. I think people are a bit scared of it at the minute, but ultimately, I think all of this extra liquidity that's going to come in is going to benefit so many more industries, and you know the industries that you cover as well.
You'd hope so. You would hope so, and I think there's still a little bit of capital starting to go into some of those sectors, and I do think it should, you know, because I do think that if you can balance, and this is my intention, gents, and this is hopefully a strategy that people can get their head around and get behind. My intention is to build a business first, and that's what we're doing with Priority AI and with Halfspace. We're focused on revenue generation. We're focused on delivering good products and services that can actually drive increased revenue and increased profitability to build a strong business foundation. And then we've also got the addition of a Bitcoin treasury opportunity, and if that drives some excitement and that drives actually some longer term value, because Bitcoin actually does very well, and we still believe that there's a good chance that in our fundamental thought process that Bitcoin will rise and will grow, then that's exciting. But we're sailing both parts of that coin, if that makes sense. We've got a business developing and growing, and we've got the addition of the treasury facility. So
yeah, I'm sure you have in mind already, because of the intricacies that you've had to go through on AIM. This, you know, this is not Aquis, as in, you know, go ahead and do whatever you want. Because of the intricacies of the FCA and everything else that you've had to go through, as well as the Nomad for AIM, you stated there that you're going to have a treasury person in place once you have more than $1 million or pounds, I think it was, of Bitcoin. So have you got any people in mind for that particular position?
We,
you know,
we
that's
do.
that's got the experience, because this seems to be what drives the Bitcoin community, is having the right person in charge of this particular thing.
We absolutely do, and we've been talking to now working with a very, very credible business that was established a fund, and they also established a capital markets focused digital asset business out of Canada originally, and they've subsequently had a regulated office, an FCA regulated office set up in London. So yeah, I'm actually really quite excited that if we do, and the intention obviously is to potentially get to over £1 million worth of Bitcoin at a certain stage in the future, that we will adopt a serious treasury management individual or team.
Very good.
I know, I think we've covered a fair bit of it already, but I think kind of one of the key points to highlight is that with a lot of these Bitcoin treasury companies that are popping up, they only have the Bitcoin treasury, right? And, you know, on this podcast, we've heard from some individuals who are, you know, Bitcoin maxis, and it's not an unreasonable position to take when you've seen how well the asset done over the past few years. However, it's also an incredibly volatile investment. So you put it on your balance sheet, it sounds fantastic. 2022, Bitcoin dropped 70%. So you want to be in this position, don't you, where you're running a sustainable business as well, which is the primary focus, and then stacking Bitcoin on the side. It'll go up, but not in a straight line.
I think that is an incredibly important point. And I mean, today's announcement that we've made is around fundamentally the regulatory framework and the hoops that we've needed to jump through to make sure that we maintain a sensible position in this Bitcoin treasury space. And that's set down obviously because we're on AIM specifically, as Kevin rightly said, we're not on Aquis. So we have to have a focus on and one eye on making sure we maintain the regulatory framework. And I think that gives us good balance, because it really isn't the forefront of our business model, BTC treasury. It's exciting for the market potentially and for investors, but the focus for me is driving and growing an artificial intelligence data solutions business that have fantastic synergies. And we've already driven new business out of those synergies, new customers. Hopefully I'll be able to update the market in time, not too far, not too distant time, on new contract wins for our business?
Well, I mean, in addition to the new contract wins, James, and we probably should wrap up, we don't want to take up too much of your time, especially with the beautiful sunny weather we're all having. You know, I mean, I'm kind of looking at the indicators for the second half. You know, we're about to go into H2. We're looking obviously for those, that growth in customer numbers across the core SME platform that we've talked about in the past. We also want new users for the funding circle and Capitano AI. Obviously, the performance of the Bitcoin treasury, that's probably going to influence investor confidence, hopefully, you know, to a lesser or to a higher degree, depending on how much it takes up of your time. Then we've also got the NVIDIA partnership with Leukemia Care Project and Capitano AI's US market expansion. I think that pretty much covers where you're trying to take the business. But have you got other pots on the boil in addition to those?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got obviously a big keen focus now with Halfspace coming into the team on the sports vertical that we partnered earlier on in the year with Funding Circle as well. We've had a really good first half as a listed business, in my opinion, of new business development. The opportunities we've had to update the market on a regular basis about what we've been able to achieve, I think, has been key. We do have interims out, so our interims are due at the end of June. Now, bear in mind, we're September year end, so that's September to March. So we were only listed business from the 30th of December. So that will only cover January, February and March for us, so the first few months. But, you know, hopefully we'll be able to demonstrate to the market, you know, that we're already revenue generative in that first quarter. You know, we're already starting to push into, you know, a position of actually building a genuine business. And as we said, and I think just to go back to your original point, which I think is a really important one, Charles, you know, Bitcoin is very, very volatile and it can go up or can go down as well as up, as they say, significantly. So having this hopefully long-term strong business growth as the key pillar of what we're doing and the focal point of what we're doing should obviously give us a long-term value proposition for the market to get behind. And if we can then add in addition to that, the Bitcoin treasury, and we're starting to see some of these treasury businesses that are listed companies come to us and work with us. We've taken on some contracts from them. They want to pay us in some of their Bitcoin. So, you know, the more companies that adopt the treasury,
the better for you. Yeah.
Better for us, because they can pay us in it and we'll sit on that asset for the long term, right?
Fantastic. And then final question, more of a personal question. It is boiling hot down in Devon where I am at the moment. What are your plans for the weekend? Beach?
It's gorgeous. It isn't actually. It is my baby nephew's first birthday weekend, and he's actually my godson as well. So my brother's son Zachary, he'll be 1 year old. We're having a lovely barbecue at Matthew's house on Sunday, and he's hosting. He's doing the burgers and sausages, so we'll be enjoying a big barbecue and hopefully the sunshine lasts through the weekend.
I'm sure it will. Lovely to chat to you.
Like a good excuse for a few drinks to me, James, that.
It really does.
You know, I've got a busy Monday morning, gents. You know, we've got to be back at it and fresh as a daisy, so there'll be no boost for me on Sunday.
So, you've been on the podcast before, James, but we've never really asked you the relevant question. What is the ultimate Sunday roast in the Sheehan household?
Oh, that's a great question, actually. That's a really, really good one. So we love a Sunday roast. We do. I must admit that it's a focal point for our family, actually. We do get around the table on a Sunday. My daughter's obviously off at university these days, so it's nice. She's back at the moment for summer, so we will sit around. For me, I've got to say it's a good roast beef with the horseradish, the Yorkshire puddings, nice roast potatoes. I do a good roast potato. The rest of the household, I'll probably say, probably roast pork. My wife does some incredible crackling. She's a wizard. I think everybody loves
good. Crackling. So the question, James, is twofold. The horseradish, are we going for the spicy blow your head off horseradish or the creamed Marks and Spencer's horseradish?
Yeah, I like the creamed Marks and Spencer's horseradish, I'd say. I don't want to blow my head off. I do like a bit of English mustard with it as well, though. So
okay.
I can sometimes go over the top with English mustard, but
If you aren't crying, you aren't trying, is why. So you've got to be going.
The most important thing for you boys must be the gravy, though, surely.
Well, absolutely.
Yorkshire puddings, mate.
Yorkshire puddings. Yes, they're so easy to get wrong. You can get the Yorkshire puddings wrong. It's just a disappointment. Everything else just falls apart.
I completely agree. And again, guys, a little bit more insight into my family life. My wife is a Yorkshire lass, really hearty, from a small village called Great Ayton up in North Yorkshire.
You can tell a Yorkshire lass, but you can't tell her much.
Exactly that, Phil. You know.
But James, with a name like James Sheehan, With the names like James Sheehan, you got to have some Irish roots. So I presume this beef is very well cooked.
You know, I like it pink. I like it pink. Oh. That again is down to the wife. You know, I probably would have had it a little bit more well done before. She has rare steak, and I've got used to the kind of pink roast beef. The gravy's got to be brilliant. The roast potatoes, and not as many vegetables. Peas and carrots, maybe that'll do.
Don't waste any of that. It's
a very Ron Swanson.
Just give me meat and Yorkshire pudding and gravy. Yeah, no, it's got to be swimming as far as I'm concerned. Mine's definitely still last. Swimming in nice fatty gravy with mint sauce.
I think the most important part of a roast, and it might be controversial, is the roast potatoes. They're crunchy. Yeah. They've got to be lots, you know, a lot of gravy soaked into them. Oh, my. Get the roast is right and you're laughing.
No, meat.
Yeah. can I ask, do you go double potatoes in your house? Do you have roast potatoes and mashed potatoes?
At Christmas, yes, but only, you know, and then along with bread sauce and like literally the plate at Christmas is swimming. It's all about the moisture.
No, if I'm making a roast, it has to have both potatoes.
Yeah, both
potatoes. It has to have mashed potatoes and roast potatoes.
Yeah, I'm a bit like you, Kev. Like you.
And sometimes you even mash the carrots into the potatoes so the kids will eat the carrots, because otherwise they won't eat them.
Mine a bit bigger now, so they throw that.
Very good. Well, on that note, we'll say James Sheehan, CEO of Priority Intelligence, thanks very much for appearing back on the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much, gents. Really good to be here. See you soon.
All right, so let's have a look at some of the movers and shakers of the week. I mean, it's no surprise. I mean, let's have a look at maybe a commonality between some of the movers. We've got Talfa up 567%. We've got Priority Intelligence up some 200%. Tiger Royalties at 165%. Bluebird Merchant Ventures up 66%. Cycle AI up 60%. And Cell AI up 57%, with Vinance up 44%. So what is the commonality between all of those stocks I've just mentioned?
Oh, they've made us all a horrendous amount of money.
And they're all pretty much within the meme coin, the Bitcoin treasury.
Treasuries, yeah. Tau is its own special little thing.
I think the main thing is they're all quite hard to pronounce except for Priority.
For you, you struggle. I mean, how did you manage to say earlier on Vinanzi, Vinanza or something like that? It's finance with a V.
It's called now the London Bitcoin Treasury.
Yeah, BTC.
When that goes on NASDAQ, who knows what will happen, but I suspect it will go up.
Yeah. Are they playing on the whole Brits? Are they playing on the fact that the Americans love anything British and they're like, oh, London? 100%.
But I'm surprised they didn't get the Queen as the logo, you know?
I think there isn't another game in town for a few weeks, to be honest. I think this game's going to play out now for, as the guys were talking, they've all got rapid BTC take up for the next 3 months. All of the ones that we talked about, even Priority ultimately is going to go down this line to get itself a war chest. Why wouldn't it do it? You know, the scenario is that the flywheel is real, and the flywheel is going to kick off, in my view. If you think about that flywheel having a bit of water and picking it up, it's going to spray the other shares, because it is going to happen. We've seen a little bit of liquidity suck out the other shares just now, but as they go up, that's going to change and go back in, I think.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts?
Well, I guess we'll see. I mean, the problem is, for me, on the one hand, I do understand the flywheel. I also know, despite what our guests have said, I mean, my view is that the flywheel can go in reverse if Bitcoin falls, you struggle to raise. But the sentiment at the moment is so optimistic. You know, you can't fight it at the moment. It's so, so bullish. The risk is that one company does something wrong, or a major investor sells too much at one time, and then only takes one piece of a Jenga tower to pull out and go wrong, and then that's it. But you know, it's like I wouldn't liken it exactly to the GameStop saga, but it's that kind of feeling. And also, just in general, we haven't had sentiment like this for years. You know,
so it's great to experience.
It's fun, and also, you know, to your point on like the capital coming in. Whether this lasts for another few, you know, week or two, or for a few months, or even longer, when the American market opens and you get access to these companies via the OTC, all that capital comes into the UK system. And now all of our UK investors, the big names on Twitter and elsewhere, they're generating more and more profit. So at some point when this play ends or when it calms down, you're going to have people who, you know, have had some money, have a lot more excess capital to deploy. Where are they going to put it? And that's the next big question.
Yeah, I think it's going to be deployed in the resource sector, to be honest. Yeah. But that's just because I'm biased.
Well, I speculate too. I agree.
And you know, my view is that this is going to carry on for at least 3 to 6 months. I can't see that it won't, because there's too many players involved and too much capital. And regardless of the people saying SWC and Coin are the only play in town, totally disagree, because you'd only have to look on the NASDAQ and there's a dozen of them. You know, so there is going to be more plays coming. We're going to have HEV do well. I think you're going to have BTC do well. You're going to have Priority do well. What was the other one? Cycle. What were the other ones? Name them.
There's tons of them. Yeah.
But my point I was going to make was, my view, it was the same as the dot-com bubble, is that there will be winners and losers. Now, my view is that the winners are actually going to be the ones that have intrinsic businesses as well as the BTC. You might not get the short-term mega boost now, but in the long run, you're going to be buying a business that buys businesses and has BTC, and that will be a multiplier that will be far greater than just the BTC. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I see.
Okay, well, I think we've talked long enough there. It's a bit of a bonanza one with two guests. Lots of talk about Bitcoin Treasury and the wider market. So on that note, obviously, we say thanks for listening. If you do like what you've heard, please do subscribe. Hit the bell icon for any further notifications of future episodes. And yeah, thanks for listening. All have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.